Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program, Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with Abby Tagliano and Walker Wildman. Walker, what have you posted on our Facebook page?
Well, I just posted the Washington Examiner article about potential spending cuts and federal workforce cuts that might be taking place in the coming months or years.
That's some juicy stuff right there you put up there. That's some clickbait you put up there on our Facebook page, Walker.
Yeah, especially for the federal workers who are going to lose their jobs.
What they're saying, though, is that he's not going to he and the Congress, I guess, are going to let attrition take place within the federal government and not hire new people. They're not planning on firing a bunch of people.
Right.
Doesn't sound like to me.
And then I also posted the ex-Black Panther that was on Tucker Carlson last night.
That clip we played?
Yeah, the one criticizing Rep. John Lewis.
I would encourage everybody to go watch that interview.
Weaver was his last name?
Yes.
Dream? What was his first name?
Dream Weaver.
You got me. Okay. Is that like a 70s joke?
Yes, he doesn't get the song. It's a song.
Walker's 23.
When y'all start saying names that I don't recognize and then y'all start laughing, something to do.
The 70s. Yeah. The 70s joke that Walker doesn't get. That's okay, Walker, though. I mean, there's no reason for you to remember Dream Weaver.
Right.
But anyway, so you posted that interview that Tucker Carlson did with that gentleman, formerly Black Panther. That was an excellent interview. I encourage everybody to go watch it. And he talks about he just lambasted the Democrat Party for what they've done to the African American community. You need to go listen to what he has to say and see if you think it's fair or not. Steve Jordahl is with us, and Steve is from OneNewsNow.com and American Family Radio News. Works. He's a colleague with Fred Jackson. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Steve.
Gary Wright is who.
Gary Wright. Yeah. Dreamweaver.
Dreamweaver.
Yeah. It's not a worship song.
No.
Just a 70s pop clock classic.
Yeah. One of the first to use synthesized music, by the way.
Huh?
One of the first songs to use synthesized music.
Now, I would say in this building, American Family Association, across the street, the other building, I would say you, Tim, Rusty Benson, and Steve Jordahl know the most in terms of music from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
You guys are always coming up with this this off
the wall stuff. I would be more of a
70s
guy. I was born in 63, and so I grew up with the 70s music, which I love 70s music. So you think if you had a panel that you wanted to send forth from our staff that could answer 70s music questions,
it
would
be
send
you three
Rusty,
guys.
Steve, and me.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
Okay.
I'd be honored to be on the panel.
Well, that gives me nothing in the eyes of the Lord, but it does mean
maybe a minus. I don't know. But
I don't know. Hey, this is some great. It was mostly clean 70s music was great.
So
all right, let's go to the news. What do you got?
Top of the page, One News Now, we have an article by our own Chad Groening about David Shulkin, and the question is asked, is Trump going to drain this swamp? Because Shulkin is an insider at the VA. He was at the VA. We're giving Mr. Trump the benefit of the doubt, but I encourage everyone to go to onenewsnow.com and
read
that.
He's going to hire what now? What did you just say?
His person to lead the charge at the VA to clean up that whole mess is a guy named David Shulkin, who was an assistant director at the VA.
Okay.
He was on the staff at the VA already.
Well, he must have interviewed with Trump and Pence because that was one of the big deals that Trump talked about. Yep. It was fixing the VA, the Veterans Administration hospitals, I guess.
He's got to come through on that promise.
Yeah.
He hit that.
Yeah, he did.
Every campaign speech.
That was but that's been a perpetual problem of the reputation of the VA.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll get it turned around, this gentleman. But you're saying he's been inside
he's,
the VA.
He's been there, not for long, but he has been there. So people expected Trump to bring a whole bunch of outsiders, and so far, really, he has to the federal government, but one is inside.
I don't know why Ed's idea wouldn't work. Weren't you the one who said...
I'm not the first to suggest. I suggested you give vouchers or you cover the hospital expenses, the medical expenses of VAs. They go wherever they want.
Mm-hmm. Go to whatever hospital they want.
Yeah, you don't have VA hospitals. You don't have government bureaucracy. Now, you'd have to have a small bureaucracy to take care of the funding of it and the directing of funds.
Yeah.
But the fact that you have VA hospitals and staffs working there, I'm sure there's so many good people who want to help our veterans, who work in those hospitals and do the best they can. But anytime you have a government bureaucracy, I think you're going to have, for something like that, you're going to have substandard care.
We reported here earlier that the VA has decided to associate itself with a couple of very quality hospitals. The one in, what's the big one in Minnesota?
The Mayo Clinic?
Mayo Clinic is one.
Yeah.
The problem with what you're asking, I think, Ed, is that there's several things that veterans face that really are a little bit out of the mainstream of health concerns, PTSD being one.
Yeah.
And some of the other exposures to some of the things that they were exposed to, chemicals and that kind of stuff, cause a little bit different health concerns than the general public has. And so I think the VA has tried, and not successfully, but they've tried to really focus in on those particular diseases and conditions that, and they become expert, or they want to become expert at solving those things.
I'd buy that. And, and probably, you know, with the, members of the military come back from battle missing limbs and those kind of things. I'll buy that. But in terms of the general care that anybody who's a veteran and his family, and as they get older, the same kinds of things everyone else, I would think that private care would do better. But that's something I had not thought
from
of.
From a business standpoint, it really, I don't know whose idea the VA was in the first place, but to set up these physical brick-and-mortar buildings, in order to have it to where each veteran has access to it, you would have to build hundreds of these VA facilities across the U.S. so they're within driving distance. Well, then you got a man, and it, like you're saying, it would make more sense. Of course, you may have some special units, some special places for scenarios that maybe your typical hospital can't cover, and then you pray for the travel expenses. But to have to drive 3 hours to go to a VA facility to just check your temperature, you know, stuff like that, you would think that they could just do reimbursements to local hospitals. And it would seem much more effective.
And by the way, gentlemen, if you want to know how good the government would be at universal health care, look at the VA.
Mm-hmm.
Not very, I think, is the answer. So I'm hoping.
And again, this is not to besmirch, you know, the dedication of the, you know, the hundreds and thousands of people who work there in within the VA hospital system, and I am sure are dedicated to getting veterans through their health problems. I want to make sure I say that, because I have been to a VA nursing home near here. Had a parishioner who was in one, a World War II veteran, and they were very, very good. And treated those folks, as near as I could tell, with a lot of professionalism. So we're just trying to make the system work better, and the VA has had a PR nightmare for the last number of years.
Yeah.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. One more news story, Steve.
Betsy DeVos is on the witness stand today in her committee hearing. She is the choice for education secretary. She said some interesting things. Here's a quote. "Why in 2017 are we still questioning parents' ability to exercise educational choice for their children? I'm a firm believer that parents should be empowered to choose a learning environment that's best for their individual children." She's being opposed strongly by the teachers union and other unions because of her...
Because the public school system has a monopoly here, that school choice would be a serious challenge to.
But she would include Christian schools among those that she favors... allowing people to choose with government funds.
I think what she should do is try to shut down her own agency.
Well,
if she's confirmed, what's her name again?
Betsy DeVos.
Betsy DeVos. If she becomes Secretary of Education, we don't need a Department of Education in Washington D.C. If you want to take the money that the Department of Education is budgeted and send it to the states, That would be that you'd be better off doing that. Again, with almost anything, the more centralized power you have, and it becomes further away from the people it affects, right. It's inefficient, and burdensome, and bureaucratic, and ineffective.
You're almost verbatim quoting the second quote I was going to pull from the story. It won't be Washington, D.C. that unlocks our nation's potential, nor a bigger bureaucracy, tougher mandates, or federal agencies. The answer is local control, listening to parents, students, and teachers. That's Betsy DeVos.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if she passes. She has to be confirmed by the Senate.
She does?
Yes.
Okay. She probably will be. The Republicans hold a 52-48 margin, and most of them subscribe to her philosophy. School choice, charter schools, more opportunity, and we'll see. We'll see what happens with their. I think we need to try some new things here because our educational system, and this is no fault of individual teachers, but we're just not holding up to the standards that we used to have in America. If you look at the testing against some other students from around the globe. All right, listen, Steve, thanks so much for the Gary Wright trivia.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
You can count on me anytime for 70s music and thanks. Beatles, by the way, 60s too.
60, you're a 60. How old are you?
I'm 57. Okay, I'll be 57 in March.
I'm 53, so I missed that. Miss that era you're
I'm
talking
not,
about.
I'm not firsthand, not most. I do remember listening to Beatles 45s at the time.
Backwards?
But
did you listen backwards?
Never did.
Wow, but you missed
the
message.
That's where the real satanic stuff was
most
found.
Most of my Beatles love has come as an older adult.
All right, Steve, thank you so much.
Good day, gentlemen.
For being on with us at Steve. Go visit onenewsnow.com. Remember that backward masking thing was popular?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the 80s, and everybody was saying, listen
Christians
to this.
Were all over that.
My dad had a funny, I told my dad, hey, Dad, come here. You got to listen to this song back. This is me talking to my dad back in the early 80s, and I went to some.
Well, those seminars, those conferences.
Those seminars.
They were powerful. I mean, they were popular.
They were playing the songs back. And I'd tell my dad, come here and listen to this song, Dad. And dad would say, well, why don't you play it forward?
Yeah, if you want to find out,
if you
want
to find out
it.
What's wrong with these trashy lyrics, why don't you just play them forward? You don't have to listen to them backwards. And he had a good point on a lot of that stuff. But anyway, thank you for listening to American Family Radio. We appreciate it as always. We're live streaming on Facebook Today's Issues page. Also, you can get our app for our phone. From your phone, not our phone. We're gonna
get
keep
your
our,
own apps.
We're gonna keep our phone. Maybe I'll upgrade one day. What are you upgrading? You and I got the same phone.
I have a iPhone 5S.
Mine's just a 5. I think. How do you know if it's an S or not, Walker?
That's what they told me.
It's just different software.
What do you?
I got a 6.
You got a 6?
Well, the 6 is bigger, and I didn't want to go. Well, I don't want a big phone.
They are a little too big.
Yeah.
Well, my friend the other day, he had a 7. I didn't know they had gone.
Oh yeah,
I'm getting left behind. I'm on the wrong side of cell phone history.
You're in Tim LaHaye land, man. Right, you're left behind.
Well, you are too.
I am. I'm purposefully left behind.
When they get to iPhone 9, you and I need to go up to 6, Ed.
Well, the problem is that new software gets you get behind on new software.
Yeah,
right.
And they don't develop it for older operating systems.
My phone told me on Saturday afternoon, you're out of space, buddy.
Yeah.
It told me you can't take them. You can't take them.
I signed up for the 99-cent.
I got to do something. It said you can't
Apple
take any
storage.
More pictures.
Yep.
And watch this. I will take more pictures. And I started deleting some to be able to take more.
Those are gone forever, by the way.
I don't care. I don't need them anymore.
These are your grandkids?
Well, some of them are. Anyway, it's a long story.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where you take a picture in 2013 and nobody's ever looked at it again. So you're going, do I really need this picture if nobody's ever going to look at it?
Yes.
All right, welcome our next guest, Walker.
Yeah, we have on Dan Gaynor, who's the Vice President of Business and Culture at the Media Research Center. Dan, thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be on with you all.
And what kind of phone do you have,
Dan? We got to know, Dan.
I actually have an iPhone 6S. I am relatively current.
So how much space?
I did like the Tim LaHaye joke, though, so that was great.
How much space you got left there on your phone before you fill up?
I Diana Falzone, who writes for Fox 411, the other day tweeted out that you know, that people should be obligated to do community service every time they take 50 selfies. And I said, based on that idea, I would never do anything to help anybody.
Right.
I'm telling you, I've taken probably 5 selfies in my life. We were on vacation.
Right.
We were on vacation this summer, and
you had to.
No, it wasn't me. I went to an event. I went to a show.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was in the back of the room. And there was this girl, she's about 19 years old, sitting on the back row with her boyfriend, and it was a great show going on up front.
Yeah.
This girl, I'm telling you, I was holding my grandson, you know, in the back, but behind everybody. And I'm telling you, she took 30 selfies.
Missed the show.
30 selfies, and I'm telling you, an hour. Every 2 minutes she took a selfie, and she'd adjust her hair, and I thought, man, you talk about narcissism. I don't even know if this girl could spell that, but she was, and I thought, a lot of these young people, I hate to sound like an old fogey, are so self-absorbed with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like self-worship almost, but that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about worshiping God. That's what we're here to talk about. Tell us, Dan, what you do at the Media Research Center.
I'm vice president of business and culture, which means you know, part of my job is to basically keep the press in line, and that takes some doing, especially given how anti-Christian and, you know, anti-religious they are.
They're just goo-gooing over Trump. I don't get it. They're just falling all over themselves in admiration. And, what's the love affair between Trump and the mainstream media? What's that about?
They hate his guts.
That's what it is.
I mean, what's amazing to me is you think about all of the villains of history,
yeah,
and they've liked every single one of them, I think, better than they like Donald Trump.
Hmm.
Because Donald Trump calls them out on all of their abuses and all of their biases, and he's the first person, and in my memory, who seems unwilling to give in when they bully him. I mean, it's a pretty standard media tactic. Politician says something conservative, and a journalist comes up and says, "Well, you know, I wanted to ask you about such and such. Do you believe that?" And the politician says, "Yeah, I believe this." And they say, "You don't really believe that." And they ask you a couple different times. Then they start throwing anecdotes. Well, you know, 4 people in North Dakota are harmed by this. You can't really believe that. Meanwhile, it might help, you know, 2 million. They don't care, you know. And Donald Trump doesn't back down from that. And then he also is, shall we say, pugnacious in dealing with the press. And then he goes around them using Twitter. And it's just such a wonderful combination that they cannot stand.
20 million. I think he has 20 million followers on Twitter, Donald Trump. And that's probably going to go up next week.
Well, he's gone up from Election Day was 12. Hmm. So he's got a 67% increase from Election Day.
Wow.
And, you know, now people will say, and correctly, that Obama has 80 million. But a lot of those are not in this country, and the engagement on Obama's Twitter is not the same thing, because Trump uses Twitter the way a boxer uses his fist. You know, he uses it to fend off his opponent.
Yeah.
Hey, what about this story about religion in America? What's going on there?
This is a great story, which explains why you probably didn't, you know, hear about it the right way and hear about it much at all. You know, we keep hearing about the decline in church attendance and, you know, the rise of atheism, the rise of agnostics in this country. And the media love that story. Oh, people are being less religious. But there's a new study that came out from Wilfrid Laurier University. And a professor looked at 22 churches in Ontario. Now, so it's a small study, but it's a sort of leading indicator. And it's a good thing where we want to know more. And he looked at which churches are growing and which churches are not. And it turns out, you know, and here's the quote. It's a great quote from the professor who did this. "Conservative Protestant theology, with its more literal view of the Bible, is a significant predictor of church growth, while liberal theology leads to decline. So what's happening is, according to this study, the people who actually believe in something, espouse traditional faith, espouse the Bible, those churches are growing. It's the ones that push the mushy interpretation of the Bible where it stands for nothing at all. Those are the churches that are declining. So while the overall Christian numbers nationwide might be declining, the numbers of hardcore, you know, faith-based, Bible-based Christians might be on the rise. So the left might be totally misinterpreting it. And it's like belief in anything, but particularly faith. There are always people who are not hardcore, always people who just go along to get along, and they don't feel like they have to now.
Dan, the professor who helped to conduct this study, named David Haskell, he came to what he called, quote, counterintuitive discovery with this research. Why did he explain the research this way?
Well, I think because he's in academia, and you know, there's a lot of built-in assumptions about what's happening in churches these days. You know, that all churches are on the decline. That, you know, that we've moved into a secular age. Well, because we have moved into a secular age. We've gone from, in my lifetime, being a pro-Christian nation to an anti-Christian nation. And Canada's further ahead of that, to the point where Canada, you know, has some real problems. They don't have the same religious freedoms we do, and they have some real problems there. And so I think they've built in this idea that, you know, Christianity is on the wane. And because I've read the book, and I know we win in the end, I have news for them. It's not.
Well, go ahead, Ed.
I was going to say, and we were almost out of time, Dan, but it kind of raises the obvious question. If you're going to a church that doesn't really believe Christianity, why go at all? Why not just go play golf? If it's just a group that gets together for kicks, and there's no real heart to the faith, there's no there, then take Sunday off. And I think that's why mainline churches, maybe an oversimplification of it, but it seems like that would at least be a rational explanation of why liberal churches
are dying.
But because they don't offer anything genuine. I went to a Unitarian service with a friend of mine years ago, and it was like just going to a club, you know. And there wasn't any faith there. And I think people understand they need God in their lives, and that's so they're drawn to churches that actually talk about God in the Bible.
I had a friend who went to one of these mainstream Protestant denominations that are dying the other day.
Yeah.
Went to one of their churches and said the sermon was preached and the Bible wasn't even used at all in the sermon. And that kind of stuff is rampant. And that's the reason, if you don't believe in anything, people aren't going to come.
Right.
Okay? If you don't believe in sin and repentance and forgiveness and hell and heaven and Jesus died on the cross. That's a pretty serious price to pay for what?
Right.
For sin, to pay our price for sin. Well, if that isn't even preached in the church, as you say, Ed, ultimately people aren't going to come because there's no reason to go because the church doesn't believe in anything. On the other hand, churches that proclaim the gospel of Christ and believe in the Bible, they will continue to grow.
Right.
Thanks so much, Dan. We appreciate it. What's your website?
Newsbusters.org.
Newsbusters.org. Check that out. Walker, did you post the article we just talked about?
Yes, posted the research.
On our Facebook page?
Yes, sir.
Check out our Today's Issues Facebook page for all the stories we've talked about today. Have a great day, everybody.